Lecture number two. The intro. Life eludes natural scientific observation because life is not a material phenomenon, but a gift, a grace from the spiritual world. Death, however, is experienced only on earth. This is why, of all the beings of the divine spiritual world, only Christ knows death. In the spiritual world, the only experience similar to death is loneliness, the loneliness of knowing only oneself. Those who live on earth only for themselves may encounter such loneliness in the life after death. Therefore, we must live on earth in a way that prepares us for continuing life in the spirit. From this point of view, the purpose of earthly life is to establish connections and relationships with others. This is because in the first period after death, those who have died connect only with those they have known on earth or those who died with them. Later, other relational faculties developed on earth come into play, without which the soul after death experiences loneliness. The first of these is a moral disposition that acknowledges the unity and value of all human beings. Second is the religious sensibility developed through the devotion and reverence that grow in us through the practice of a particular religious life. And third, there is an expanded understanding of the unity of all religious striving, and that Christianity contains the seed of universal religion. The presence and knowledge of the Christ, whether recognized by that name or not, is thus tremendously important. The lecture is called The Life of the Dead, given in Düsseldorf, April 27, 1913. The relationship between life and death is mostly misunderstood. One often finds in theosophical writings the remark that the human soul and spirit could disappear completely. It is said, for example, that if a soul burdens itself with enough evil, it could disappear in the course of evolution. Furthermore, it is often emphasized that those black magicians who have worked such evil will meet that fate. Those who have shared our goals for some time will know that I have always opposed such statements. Above all, we must maintain the knowledge that what we call death on the physical plane is meaningless in the suprasensory world. This is true even for the region of the suprasensory immediately bordering our world. Today I will deal with a certain aspect of this matter. The science that deals with the physical world has arrived at a number of laws and relationships within the physical realm. When these laws are applied to the outer phenomena of nature, they can tell us only about the structure of outer sensory reality. For example, a natural scientific investigation of a flower will reveal certain facts about the physical and chemical laws that act within the plant, but life itself always eludes such scientific observation. It is true, of course, that in recent times a few especially imaginative scientists have constructed a body of hypotheses to explain how plant life arises from mere dead substances. Such attempts are quickly being recognized as false, because any understanding of the reality of life remains a mere ideal for science. Science continually accumulates knowledge of chemical laws and so on, but nothing about life itself. The investigation of life is only an ideal for the natural scientific method, because life is something that flows from the suprasensory realm into the physical world, within which the laws of life cannot be understood. The truth of life in the physical world is true of death in the suprasensory world, except that in the suprasensory world it is a matter of the will. There, an act or impulse of will can never lead to what we know as death on earth. At most, a longing for death may arise in the suprasensory world, but not death itself. Death does not exist in the realms beyond the physical. This fact is particularly moving for the human soul, who realizes that no being of the hierarchies can ever know death. Death can be experienced only on earth. According to a biblical saying, the angels hide their faces so that they will not see the mysteries of birth. It is also true that they hide their faces so as not to see the mysteries of death. The being whom we know is the one who gave the greatest impulse to earth evolution, the Christ, is the only being in divine realms who encountered knowledge of death. No other divine spiritual beings know death. They know it only as a transformation from one form into another. The Christ had to descend to the earth to experience death. Christ alone among all the superhuman, suprasensory beings knows death through experience. As I have said, it is deeply moving to view the experience of death in relation to Christ. Now it is literally true that human beings, after passing through the gate of death, live in the suprasensory world where there is no dissolution. They can enter those realms but cannot die, because they are received into a world where there can be no destruction. In the suprasensory world, however, there is something similar to death, yet quite different from death as we know it. In human language, one would have to call it loneliness. Death can never mean the annihilation of something in the suprasensory world, but loneliness does arise. Loneliness in the suprasensory world is comparable to death here. It is not destruction, but it is far more intense than the loneliness we know on earth. It takes the form of looking back upon one's own being. One knows fully what this means only when it happens, when there is nothing to know except oneself. Consider, for example, those who developed little sympathy for their fellow human beings while on earth, people who lived essentially for themselves. Those souls encounter difficulties after death, especially in getting to know other human souls. They can live together with others in the suprasensory world without being the least aware of their existence. They are filled only with their own soul content. After death, such a soul is aware only of what lives within itself. After passing through the gate of death, those who, because of an exaggerated sense of egoism, have avoided any form of human love on earth, may be able to live only in the memory of their last earthly existence. They cannot gain any new experiences because they do not know and cannot contact any other being. They must depend completely on themselves, because as human beings on earth, we prepare a particular world for ourselves after death. Here on earth, we do not actually know ourselves. Science, because it knows only the corpse, can teach us only about what we are no longer. The brain thinks, but it cannot think itself. We see a portion of ourselves and a larger portion when we look in the mirror, but this is only our outer aspect. We do not live in ourselves on earth. We live together with the surrounding world that impinges upon our senses. But through ourselves, through all that we experience here, we are preparing to expand into the macrocosmos and become a macrocosmos, to become all that we see around us on earth. Here on earth we see the moon. After death we expand so that we become the moon, just as on the earth we are our brain. We expand into Saturn so that we become Saturn, just as we are now our spleen. After death the human being becomes a macrocosmic being. When the soul is departed from the body, it expands into the entirety of the planetary system, so all souls simultaneously dwell within the same spatial area. They interpenetrate one another, but without being aware of it. Only spiritual connections determine whether we know about one another or not. We prepare ourselves during our life on earth to expand into the whole of the universe that we behold here in its physical reflection. But what, in fact, is our world after death? Now we are surrounded by mountains, rivers, trees, animals, and minerals. Then we live in the universe. The universe becomes our organism. It constitutes our organs. We are our world. We view ourselves from the surroundings. This process begins in the etheric body immediately following death when we see the tableau of our life. Were it not for the fact that while we are on earth, we make connections with other human beings and more frequently through spiritual science, with beings of the higher hierarchies, we would have nothing to do after death apart from continuously observing ourselves. This is not intended to be trivial. It is a truly shattering fact. To observe only oneself throughout several centuries is not an especially enviable prospect. We become a world for ourselves. But it is the connections we have made on earth that open wider vistas for the self after death. The purpose of earthly life is to develop connections and relationships that can be continued after death. Everything that makes us into sociable beings after death must be prepared on earth. Fear of loneliness is the torment in the spiritual world. We can experience it. This fear falls upon us repeatedly because we move through a number of stages between death and rebirth. Even if we experience a measure of sociability at one stage, we may fall into loneliness during the next. The first period after death is such that we can establish a good connection only with souls who have remained on the earth, or with those who died about the same time as we did. In this situation, the closest connections continue to have an effect beyond death. The so-called living who have remained on earth can do much. One who has a connection with a departed soul can remind that soul of what it knew of the spiritual world while on the earth. This is possible, above all, by reading to the dead. We can perform the greatest service for a dead person by forming a picture of that individual in our soul and softly reading a work of spiritual science, thus instructing that soul, so to speak. We can also convey thoughts to the departed, thoughts we have made our own, always with a vivid image of the one who has passed on. We should not be miserly in this respect. This enables us to bridge the abyss that separates us from the dead. It is not just in extreme cases that we can help the dead in this way. It is true in every case. This provides a comforting feeling that can alleviate the sorrow experienced when someone we have loved passes on. As we go more deeply into the suprasensory world, particular relationships become less established. We still find individual relationships in the astral world, but the higher we ascend, the more we find a cessation of what weaves between separate beings. Now, there are beings everywhere. The relationships among those that are of a soul nature, and we need them to avoid... The relationships among these are of a soul nature, and we need them to avoid loneliness. It is the mission of the earth to establish relationships between one human being and another. Otherwise, we would remain alone in the spiritual world. During the first phases after death, our world consists of relationships, the friendships we formed with our fellow human beings on earth. These friendships continue. For example, one who investigates with suprasensory perception finds the departed soul in the vicinity of a person on earth whom it can follow. Many people in our time live with those who have died recently or perhaps at some earlier period. One also sees how many come together with a number of their ancestors to whom they were related by blood. The seer often encounters the fact that a departed soul links itself to ancestors who died centuries ago, but this lasts only for a certain period. The soul would again feel extremely lonely if there were not other connections that, though far removed, prepare the person to be sociable in the spiritual world. Within our movement, we have discovered a basic principle that stems from a cosmic task entrusted to us. This principle involves the formation of relationships among people in the most varied ways. Consequently, anthroposophy is cultivated not just by giving lectures. Within the Anthroposophical Society, we try to bring people together so that personal relationships may form. These connections are valid for the suprasensory world, as well to the degree that a person who belongs to a particular stream in our society creates connections for the realm beyond the physical. There comes a time, however, when more general connections are necessary. A phase comes when a feeling of loneliness arises in souls who have gone through the gate of death without any moral soul disposition and without moral concepts, souls who have rejected a moral disposition of soul during their earthly life. It is a simple fact that those endowed with a moral soul disposition are of greater value here on earth than those lacking in morality. A moral human being is of greater worth for humanity as a whole, just as a sound, healthy stomach is more valuable to the whole person than one that is sick. It is not easy to put your finger on where the value of the moral human being lies for all of humanity, or to pinpoint the harm created by one who is immoral. But you can understand what I mean when I say that a person devoid of a moral soul disposition is a sick member of humanity. Through that immoral soul disposition, such a person becomes increasingly alienated from others. To be moral also means to acknowledge that one has a relationship to all human beings. This is why love of all humanity is self-evident to all moral people. Immoral people feel lonely in a certain phase after death because of their lack of morality. The torments of loneliness at this stage can be dispelled only by the moral disposition of the soul. Consequently, when we investigate the lives of human beings spread out after death in the macrocosmos, we see that the immoral individuals are in fact lonely, whereas moral individuals find a connection with others of similar moral ideas. Here on earth, human beings are grouped by nationality, for example, or in some other way. Between death and rebirth, people also group themselves, but according to the moral concepts and soul dispositions they have in common. This phase is followed by one of development in which even those endowed with a moral soul disposition feel lonely if they lack religious concepts. A religious turn of mind is the preparation for sociability at a particular stage of life between death and rebirth. Here we also discover that people are condemned to loneliness if they are unable to have religious feelings and connections. We find people of the same religions grouped together. This period is followed by one in which it is no longer enough to have lived within a religious community. A phase approaches when one can feel loneliness. This period is particularly important in the life between death and rebirth. We feel alone if we cannot now bring understanding to every human soul in its essential character, even though we experienced togetherness with those of like religion. We can prepare for this communion only by understanding all religious confessions. This was unnecessary before the mystery of Golgotha, because experience in the spiritual world was different then. Now it has become essential. A correct understanding of Christianity is a preparatory step. We cannot encounter the essential being of Christianity in other religious creeds. It is not correct to place Christianity next to other religious creeds. Although certain Christian confessions are perhaps narrow-minded, nevertheless Christianity, when properly understood, bears within it the impulse to understand all religious creeds and tendencies. How has the West understood Christianity? Consider Hinduism. For the most part, only those who are Hindu can be true adherents. If, for instance, that kind of racial religion were prevalent in Europe today, we would still have a Wotan cult, which would be the Western equivalent of a racial religion. But the West has accepted a religion that did not arise from its own folk substance, but one that came from the East. Something was accepted that could work only through its spiritual meaning. The Christ impulse cannot be subsumed into a racial or folk religion. In fact, the truth is that those among whom Christ appeared did not acknowledge him. That is the remarkable fact about Christianity. It contains the seed that enables it to become the universal religion. One cannot therefore take an intolerant attitude toward other religions. The mission of Christianity is not to bring dogma to people. Of course, Buddhists smile at a religion that lacks even the idea of reincarnation. Such a religion must seem false to them. But Christianity, if correctly understood, presupposes that all are Christian in their innermost being. If you say to a Hindu, "You are a Hindu, and I am a Christian," it will be obvious that you have not understood Christianity. Christianity has been truly understood only when you can say that inwardly the Hindus are as much Christian as you are, but have as yet only had the opportunity to become acquainted with a preparatory religion. We must try to show them where our religions correspond. The best thing would be for Christians to teach Hinduism to the Hindus, and then attempt to take Hinduism a stage further so that Hindus can gain a point of contact with the general stream of revolution. We understand Christianity only when we see all individuals as Christians in the depths of their hearts. Only then is Christianity the religion that transcends race, color, and social position. That is Christianity. We are entering a new age. Christianity can no longer work as it has during past centuries. It is the task of anthroposophy to bring the new understanding of Christianity that is needed. From this perspective, the anthroposophic worldview is an instrument of Christianity. Among the religions of the earth, Christianity appeared last. New religions can no longer be established. That belongs to the past. Religions followed one another and brought forth Christianity as the last flower. Today, the task is to form and apply the impulses of Christianity. This is why in our spiritual scientific movement, we try to consider all the religions of the world more consciously than before, and in loving participation. In this way, we are also preparing ourselves for the period between death and rebirth, when we will experience loneliness if we cannot perceive and have access to other souls in that realm. If we understand Hinduism while on earth, then we might only sense the presence of a Hindu in the world beyond while being unable to gain any contact with that soul. You see, this is the phase during life between death and rebirth when we have also expanded our astral body to the extent that we enter the sun sphere and live there. In fact, we expand into the entire macrocosmos, and when we need the capacity for love of our neighbor, we reach the sun being. The encounter with the sun, S-U-N, occurs in this way. First, we lose the possibility of understanding all human beings unless we have gained a connection to the words, "For there two or three are gathered together in my name." "For where two or three are gathered together in my name, there am I, in the midst of them." Matthew 18:20. Christ did not mean that wherever two Hindus or one Hindu and one Christian are gathered together, there he is in the midst of them, but that wherever two human beings who have a genuine understanding for his impulse are gathered, he is there, in the midst of them. Until a certain moment, the Christ being was in the sphere of the sun. His throne was there. Then he united with the earth. Since then, we must experience the Christ impulse here on earth and carry it up into the spiritual world. If we arrive in the sphere of the sun without the Christ impulse, we are faced with an unintelligible entry in the Akasha Chronicle. Footnote. The Sanskrit term akasha, literally primordial spatial substance, chronicle, or akasha record, refers to what a clairvoyant sees as a supra-sensory record of history going back to primordial times. See Cosmic Memory, Prehistory of Earth and Man, Chapter 2. Since the Christ united with the earth, we must come to understand the Christ on earth. We have to take that understanding with us, otherwise we cannot find Christ after death. If we have gained an understanding for the Christ on earth, then as we approach the sphere of the sun, we understand the entry in the Akasha Chronicle, because it was Christ who left the Akasha Chronicle behind in the sun. The important fact is that our understanding of Christ must be aroused on the earth. It can then be preserved in higher worlds as well. Things become clear only when they are viewed within a certain framework. Some theosophical groups cannot understand that the Christ impulse exists as a fulcrum at the center of earthly evolution. It is the point from which the ascending curve begins. To maintain that Christ can appear repeatedly on earth is like saying that the beam of a balance must be supported at two points, but one cannot weigh with such scales. A conviction of this sort makes no more sense in relation to the physical world than the statement of certain esotericists that Christ goes through repeated earthly lives. One can understand the Christ impulse only with the understanding that Christ is the only God who has experienced death. For that he had to descend to the earth. One who has come to understand the Christ here will not find the throne in the sun to be empty. This understanding also enables us to recognize the nature of a particular encounter at this stage. We meet Lucifer, not as the tempter, but as a lawful power who must travel by our side if we are to progress on our journey. Qualities that are beneficial in the proper sphere become destructive in the wrong sphere. The activity of Lucifer in the physical world is evil, but after death from the sun's sphere on, we need Lucifer as a companion. We must meet Lucifer, and we must continue our journey between Lucifer and Christ. Christ preserves our soul nature with the whole wealth accumulated by our soul through previous incarnations. The task of the Luciferic power is to help us learn to apply the forces of the other hierarchical beings in the right way for our next incarnation. Irrespective of when this stage occurs, we are faced with the need to determine where on the globe and in which nation we are to reincarnate. This must be determined midway between death and rebirth. In fact, the first thing that must be determined is the location and country where the soul is to reincarnate. We prepare for this stage on earth inasmuch as we acquire a connection with the suprasensory world, but we need the support of Lucifer. Now as we return, the beings of the higher hierarchies give us the forces that guide us to a certain place at a certain time. Consider this excellent example. The appearance of Luther at a specific moment had to be prepared for from the 9th century on. Even then, forces had to be directed within the appropriate people. Lucifer must cooperate to this end so that the time and place of a re-embodiment can be determined. What one has gained through effort is preserved when one harbors Christ in the soul. But human beings are not mature enough to know the best place to work out their karma. Lucifer's assistance is needed for this. After another period of time elapses, a serious matter must be decided which involves a deeply stirring activity. It cannot be described in our everyday language except as follows. The matter must now be resolved concerning the characteristics of the parents of this soul who will incarnate at a certain time and place so as to give birth to that particular being. All this has to be determined far in advance. This means, however, that the higher hierarchies, again supported again by Lucifer, must work in a preparatory way through the whole genealogical stream long before the incarnation of a particular individual. In the case of Luther, for example, his ancestors had to be determined as early as the 10th and 11th centuries so that he might have the right parents. Science believes that we assume the characteristics of our ancestors, but from the suprasensory world we in fact influence the characteristics of our ancestors. In a certain sense, we ourselves are responsible for the way our great-great-great-grandparents were. Obviously, we cannot influence all their characteristics, yet, among others, those we ourselves later require must be present. We first instill in our ancestors what we later inherit from them. First, the time and place of birth are determined. Then the ancestry is chosen. Fundamentally, a child's love for the parents is the emergence of a union with a stream into which the incarnating being has worked for centuries from the suprasensory world. At the moment of conception, the individual receives the forces that cooperate in forming the body, specifically the head and general physical form. From then on we must picture these forces to be active primarily in the deeper structure of the head, less in the hands and feet, and even less in the torso. That is, going from the head toward the torso. We lay the foundation for this, and then continue to shape it after birth. First, everything is woven into the astral body. The shape of the head is prefigured, astrally. This proceeds to the degree that, in fact, it is only at the final stage that the shape of the cranium is incorporated into the astral prototype, which then unites with the bodily formation. The shape of the head is individual, and the shape of the brain is sculpted during the last stage. Thus, what we receive through the hereditary stream is able to unite with what we bring with us from the suprasensory world. Imagine what comes from the suprasensory world as the chalice. It is filled with water provided by the hereditary substance. The pure stream of heredity provides only the characteristics of our bodily constitution that is more independent of the circulatory and nervous systems. Whether our bones are big and strong or weak and fine depends more on heredity than on the forces we receive from the preparatory spiritual powers. The individual is to be born at a particular time and place in order to work out its karma, and thus may be the child of parents with strong bones, blonde hair, and so on. This is made possible by the hereditary stream. If theories of physical heredity were correct, we would appear with deformed nervous systems and a mere indication of hands and feet. Only supersensory insight can lead to matters that are truly meaningful. Let me relate a real example. I met a hydrocephalic boy who was different in many respects from the rest of his family. Why was he hydrocephalic? Because the Council of Higher Powers, together with Lucifer, had decreed this particular individual should be born in a particular place, and his parents were the best ones available for him. But he had been unable to work into the ancestral line properly, so that he could create what would become the appropriate substance for his head to harden correctly. Only during his lifetime would he be able to adapt his brain to the head's general structure. This individual did not find the right conditions that would allow him to influence his ancestry so that his head could harden appropriately. These are considerably important matters. They demonstrate the technique that must be adopted to enter the world. When such matters are correctly understood by science, the activities of the higher worlds will also be felt. If we continue our journey with Lucifer and Christ, we can acquire the right relationship to the progressive stream in evolution. In conclusion, during our life after death, we must first overcome the dangers of loneliness through our relationships to other human beings, and then through moral and religious connections. After that, we fashion the new person that is to incarnate in the future, a task that involves facing ourselves instead of facing the world. If we go through stages on earth condemned to loneliness, when we could be sociable, a longing arises in us after death. We long for unconsciousness, but in the higher worlds, where matter no longer exists, everything is a matter of consciousness. Therefore, we do not lose consciousness, but merely become lonely. This is true of souls who lack a connection to other souls. Death does not exist in the world beyond. Here we live in a rhythm between waking and sleeping. Likewise, life in the other world alternates between withdrawal into ourselves and social interaction with other souls. As I've explained, our life in the higher worlds depends on how we have prepared ourselves here on earth. End of lecture. But there is a question. Rudolf Steiner answered a question about whether one also could read to children who have died at birth or in early childhood. And Rudolf Steiner's answer is, one is a child only here on earth. Suprasensory vision frequently reveals that a person who dies at an early age is less childlike in the spiritual world than many who cross the portal of death at 80. I've spoken before about the painting of Raphael, the school of Athens, and how it should be understood in an esoteric sense. Recently I came to know an individual, a child, who died an early death. My connection with the soul made it possible for me to become aware of Raphael's original intention in this painting. The soul explained to me that on the left, near the group in the foreground, a part had been painted over. This is the spot where something is being written down. Today we find a mathematical formula there. Originally, however, there was a gospel passage. So you see that a child can be a highly evolved individual, able to guide one to things that can otherwise be discovered only with great difficulty. Consequently, I would say that, yes, one also can practice reading to children who die young. That's the end of the second lecture in the connected set.